Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of our TechNet radio series on building your hybrid cloud. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft for our cloud and enterprise platform solutions. And back with me today, I have Andy Surwich, one of our good friends that's been with us on a couple episodes now. Hey, Andy, how's it going?
Good. How you doing, Keith?
Very good. Very good. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, not a problem at all.
Well, Andy, I know we're in episode 15. Boy, I can't believe we're all the way in episode 15 already. But we've talked about lots of stuff in terms of building on-premises cloud solutions, building solutions up in Azure, connecting the two together into a hybrid cloud. What topic do you want to talk about today in terms of helping to take our knowledge as IT professionals to that next step in being able to more fully leverage our hybrid cloud investment?
Well, we've kind of manually set up a lot of stuff, you know, as you said, on-premise and in Azure and in a hybrid fashion. I think the next step is let's see if we can't take the human factor out of it a little bit. Let's see how much automation that we can get set up and going. I think that'd be a good next step.
So getting started with automation in the hybrid cloud. Yeah, definitely. Well, and there's so many tools that can be used for automation. I'm sure over the years you've seen lots of enterprise environments and mid-market environments or customer organizations and whatnot that have used all kinds of different automation tools. Mm-hmm. I know I certainly have. Everything from batch files to bash shell scripts to VB scripts to back in the day DCL and all kinds of other scripting languages, right?
And there's a ton of different stuff out there. It's just the question is, what's the most efficient way of automating your IT environment, I guess is the question, right?
Yeah, really. And also most efficient, I think, from a time spent in supporting the automation solution as well. Because what I've seen over time is this huge buildup of all these different point solutions in companies for automating. You know, they might use batch files for automating this and VB scripts for automating that and something else for automating another piece. And I've, over the last several years, really come, as I've been working with customers, come to the realization more and more that when we start thinking about automation, having a consistent platform, a consistent way of thinking about automation, a consistent skill set for supporting that automation, regardless if we're talking about a physical environment, a virtualized environment, a cloud environment on premises, a public cloud platform like Azure, or even application workloads that are running inside, you know, it'd be really nice to have consistency throughout. But have you been looking into that as well, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, you see a lot of different kinds of automation, you know, like you said, batch used over here, VBS used over here. And I think what we've done here at Trivalent anyway is we've really tried to start building all of our automation primarily around PowerShell, especially kind of in our managed services practice, because in all of the latest Microsoft technologies, PowerShell is present, right? There's a lot of weight, in the development cycle behind PowerShell, and you know, that's the future going forward. So we're definitely looking at PowerShell for that option.
Yeah, definitely. And even you had mentioned PowerShell being prevalent across Microsoft technologies, which it certainly is. Mm-hmm. Everything from building physical servers to Hyper-V hosts to virtual machine workloads to Azure workloads running up on our Azure cloud. But I'm also seeing a lot of growing adoption of PowerShell even outside the Microsoft ecosystem. There's PowerShell support for a variety of different Linux distributions now. PowerShell desired state configuration support as well for those distributions. Support for spinning up workloads on non-Microsoft platforms. And then as part of a hybrid cloud, even if you're leveraging non-Microsoft hardware components or virtualization stacks as part of your hybrid cloud, PowerShell is prevalent there as well. So if you're using platforms like VMware versus Hyper-V or Citrix Xen or at a hardware layer, solutions like Cisco's UCS solutions or a variety of switching and storage architectures that all have PowerShell modules. And so what I've been coming to the realization of is PowerShell has this great opportunity for IT pros that no matter what components we're touching in our environment, it provides a single scripting environment, single standard scripting environment cross-platform, regardless if we're talking about public cloud, private cloud, workloads, switches, infrastructure equipment, or whatnot. And that's really cool because it allows us to leverage that investment, and it also helps to ensure that when somebody moves on to a new role in the organization, we're not left supporting some arcane set of weird scripts that we have no knowledge of, right? So it's sort of a PowerShell as a single scripting tool in CLI for the cloud, for the whole cloud environment, regardless of the organization. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all comes down to standards, right? And I've been seeing this picture floating around the internet lately. It's just a picture of a sign that says, you know, design your code as if the guy behind you is a homicidal maniac and knows where you live.
And resiliency, yeah.
Right, exactly. And I've seen VBS code that was generated by someone prior to me, and you sit there and you spend 4, 5, 6 hours just sifting through that code trying to figure out what the heck they were trying to do. And I think PowerShell lends itself not only to the standardization, but just ease of understanding what it's doing. I mean, even if the script is not generally commented, which it should be, it better be commented, but if it's not, PowerShell is intuitive enough to where you can kind of easily figure out what the script is doing, and I think that kind of helps with that.
Yeah, definitely. It's very readable language, and you're right. You know, I find a lot of people that aren't experienced in scripting, when they start thinking about PowerShell or hearing people talk about PowerShell, they kind of get scared and back off a little bit because it may not be their expertise. But I try to point out that a lot of those same people have expertise in other command line interfaces. Could be a DOS command line interface or an NT command line interface or a Windows Server command line interface, right? Or it could be a Cisco CLI. Or maybe they're a storage person and they're used to using the storage CLI that is part of their storage platform. Or maybe they're a Linux person. And so they already have experience in the basics of leveraging a CLI. It's really just understanding the PowerShell syntax, which, as you said, is very readable and almost self-describing in some cases. Well, what do you say? Does it make sense to drop over into our lab and show everybody how easy it is to get started with PowerShell from a hybrid cloud standpoint?
Sure, sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, I'll meet you over in the lab in just a few minutes.
All right.
Well, hey, Andy, here we are over in our lab environment, and I know what you're going to say. We're supposed to talk about PowerShell and automation, and we're on the Azure. You are the Azure Management Portal, our GUI for managing Azure right now, but it does have a tie-in, and I wanted to start here because it's a really simple way that people out in the audience can think about starting to leverage PowerShell to extend their experience when they're building VMs right from the Azure Management Portal. So we'll definitely get into PowerShell scripting in a moment as well. But the area that I wanted to touch on and show everybody is some new areas, some new features that we've updated in our virtual machine agent support for virtual machines that are running on the Azure cloud. When we provision a new virtual machine, I'm just going to go down to my new button and select virtual machine, and from gallery to select a standard platform image or even a custom image of my own from the Azure gallery, like we've done in prior episodes, we'll get to a page where we'll see this new support, and then we'll talk about how we can leverage that from a PowerShell standpoint. So for now, I'm just going to build a generic image of a generic VM off of the standard Windows Server 2012 R2 data center platform image. And I'll click Next and do the basic stuff, like give my new VM a name. So let's call it, give it a descriptive name. And I'll select a tier and a size for the VM and specify my local admin username and password and whatnot. So far, no scripting involved at all. And as you know, as you're stepping through this process of filling out the details of your VM, it's a pretty canned wizard process where it helps to provision the VM. But when you're done with the provisioning process, really all it is a general VM that has plain vanilla Windows Server running inside of it. So no special configuration, no special application workloads. And I know a lot of you out there are probably saying, well, hey, I know from our prior episodes, I can build a custom VM image in Azure that'll have all these different applications inside of it. But there's also an alternative to that, because as you start going down that road of custom VM images for everything, you may start getting into the point where you're maintaining such a large number of custom VM images for every different application scenario that you're provisioning that you're increasing your maintenance of all those VMs. So on the very last page of our provisioning wizard for creating a new virtual machine, we've got a new option for installing a VM agent with some automation capabilities around it. And so in this episode, we're talking about PowerShell, but I did want to call out that we also now have native support for Puppet and for Chef, two of the provisioning and configuration management tools that are very popular nowadays in the open source world, as well as, here's the PowerShell piece that comes in, as well as being able to feed in our own custom scripts when we're provisioning a VM. And the way I like to think about this is these custom scripts give us the ability to extend the provisioning process by feeding in a custom script at the end of the provisioning process that'll run inside that virtual machine and programmatically do things like add necessary Windows Server roles, install applications, configure certain operating system elements, perhaps even join that computer to an Active Directory domain that's running up in our virtual network in the Azure cloud. So it's really a cool feature because we can have a script and supply arguments and have that supplied as part of that provisioning process. And that script can either come from local or from storage. Now, that means that we have to have some skills in PowerShell to be able to develop that script. And we talked a little bit about PowerShell at the beginning of the episode. The tool that I like to use for building scripts in PowerShell is just the plain Windows PowerShell ISE that's included with Windows PowerShell version 3 and later. So if you're running Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, Server 2008 R2, Server 2012, 2012 R2, the ISE is available. It's either included with the operating system or available as part of the PowerShell download. But this ISE scripting environment makes it super easy to begin learning PowerShell because it's got built-in context-sensitive help and IntelliSense support. So let me show you some of those features for helping to get started. Right up at the top of our toolbar in the ISE, there's a Show Command Add-on window. And what that gives us is the ability to look through all of the PowerShell modules that are installed on our machine. Each PowerShell module supplies different commandlets, and see the list of commandlets, and then by double-clicking on a commandlet, be able to see the specific syntax of that commandlet. So maybe I'm interested in looking at some of the commandlets that are around, we'll say, networking, for instance. So I can select that particular commandlet set, see a particular commandlet, and then be able to double-click and see all of the parameters that that commandlet requires. In addition, if I wanted to get real examples of how that commandlet's used, I have a context-sensitive help button that I can click on, and that'll pop up a help screen that gives me a full synopsis of what that commandlet does, syntax, and then as you scroll down through the syntax down at the bottom, it also gives generally full examples that you can use to copy and paste right into your scripting pane and be able to play with these commandlets more interactively to get to know them. So it makes it really easy to learn PowerShell. Do you use the command pane quite a bit, Andy, as well, when you're starting to work through building out some initial scripts?
Oh, sure do. ISE is a great tool whenever you're scripting. And not only that, you know, sometimes I'm asked what my favorite commandlet is, and the first thing I'll say is get help. Great, great commandlet when you're looking for the syntax and those examples as well. You know, I think you're going to find that all of the help stuff in PowerShell is quite widely documented, and I've gotten to the point to where I'm going to look there first before I look anywhere else in regards to PowerShell documentation.
Yeah, definitely. And GitHelp is a great example that we can use of showing the IntelliSense support that's built into the scripting pane as well. What you may have seen in that list of commandlets is that there's a specific syntax that PowerShell commandlets normally follow. We call it a verb-noun syntax. So there's some standard verbs that you can get to know, things like get for getting information, add for adding new items, new for creating new objects or provisioning new resources, set for setting items and whatnot. And as you type in a particular commandlet, begin typing that in and hit the dash. In this case, I typed in git dash, the IntelliSense will kick in, and it'll begin matching for me all the commandlet names that match what I've typed so far. So here's all of my Git commands that I can scroll through. And as I hover over them, you'll see that syntax that popped up a few moments ago. So if we wanted to use Git help, we can just type in Git help. If I wanted to complete this commandlet, I can just hit the tab key, and it'll complete the full commandlet name. And then if I wanted to see a list of parameters for that commandlet, well, I can do a dash and specify the commandlet name. So if we were looking for all of the commandlets that we can use to manage Azure, Microsoft Azure as a platform, for instance, we could do Git help and then look for the, use the dash module command and look for the module, the, all of the commandlets that are in the Azure module, for instance. Oh, and actually, don't have that there. Actually, we need to use dash name, sorry. And then we can look for all of the commandlets that have Azure in them, for instance. So we can just say Azure, type star, and boom, we come back with a list of all of those commandlets. Then if we had a particular commandlet name that we wanted to get more detailed help on, we can specify just that commandlet name. If we wanted to see a list of the commands that are inside of a particular module, like the Azure module, we can use Git command to do that. We can do Git command, and then use dash module, and specify our module name, and that will give us the ability to also list those specific commands that are part of that. Now, as you can see, it's scrolling through in my output pane quite quickly below. One of the other tricks that I like to use in my ISE when I'm interacting with PowerShell commandlets that generate a lot of output that I want to see is piping that output to the outgridview commandlet. So if I take the output of git command and pipe it out to outgridview, what I'll get is a pop-up window that'll pop up and allow me to scroll through that commandlet output and also do filtering and searching and whatnot as well. So that's kind of a cool feature too, to be able to leverage when you're interacting with these commands interactively. I see a lot of people that also leverage OutGridView as part of building out a tool in PowerShell that needs to have some sort of interaction with somebody that's running that tool. Now, so we've talked about the basics of using PowerShell. Now, if we wanted to create a script that we can submit as part of that custom script provisioning process that we were looking at in the Azure portal, well, first we need to decide a scenario of what we want this script to do. So at the end of building our VM, what do we want this custom script that we submit to do inside of our VM? So in our case, maybe we want it to automatically join this new member server into an Active Directory domain that's running inside the virtual network. Well, if we pop back into my PowerShell editor, I've got a basic script. You can find the full copy of the script using the links that are at the below of our, at the bottom of our episode page today. But I've got a basic script that basically just steps through the process of taking three arguments that we can supply as part of our VM provisioning process: domain name, username, and password, passing those into variables, and then using those variables to configure and join this machine to the domain. So I've got a little bit of extra commandlets in here that do some stuff along the way, like setting up the connection-specific domain on our Ethernet interface to match our domain name, taking the password and encrypting it so that we're not storing any type of clear text passwords, supplying that as a credential that we'll use to actually specify the username and password that has the rights to join this machine to our Active Directory domain, so an AD username and password, and then looking for our domain controller. So this expects that our Active Directory domain controller is also the machine that's running as the DNS server on our virtual network. So one of the next things we do is we want to make sure that that domain controller is up and running. So I have a quick loop here, a do until loop, that's testing a network connection, looking for that Active Directory domain controller, and testing to make sure that it can connect to the LDAP port 389. And it's going to wait, basically, when this script runs to make sure that before it tries to join the domain, that Active Directory is actually accessible. And then, once it is, it'll use the add computer PowerShell commandlet to add this member server to the Active Directory domain that we've specified with the credentials that we've supplied, and at the end of it, automatically restart the computer as a new member server in the domain. So once we have this join domain script built out, and again, don't be concerned if you don't understand every single line in the script. part of the way that most people learn PowerShell is through example. So we'll provide a full copy of the script for you and the links that are at the bottom of the article, and you can step through it and look at the help for each of the commandlets and understand it and use it as a learning experience to learn PowerShell with some practical scenarios as you go along. So once you have the script built, over back on our Azure portal, it's as easy as clicking on our From Local button and browsing out to where we've got that script stored. So let me just find where I put that script. I think I put it in my PowerShell folder. There's my join domain script. And then remember the arguments that we were specifying for domain name, for Active Directory username and password to join this computer into the domain. Well, we can specify those three as arguments right here. So there's contoso.com. And we'll say that maybe it's contoso admin is our domain admin. And then the password that we'll use for authenticating as that user, whatever our credentials are. Now what we've done is we've effectively just extended the provisioning capabilities of the Azure portal to not only build a generic VM, but to take that standard platform image and customize it in a way that we don't have to necessarily remote into every VM and perform the same steps over and over again. Because at the end of the day, the real value of leveraging a hybrid cloud platform like the Azure platform in your environment is not simply being able to run virtual machines up in the cloud, but being able to capitalize on the agility that a cloud platform like Azure provides. And one way of really capturing that is being able to take all those standard things that you're doing manually on a repetitive basis as part of your provisioning process of different workloads and just script them out and be able to easily supply those as custom scripts that do that provisioning in a consistent way without you having to worry about remembering all the steps and doing all that stuff manually. Well, Andy, what do you think? Does that make sense from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, I think Azure itself does a good job of creating a good cookie-cutter approach as far as workloads that you can provision, but this lets you take it one step further and tailor it specifically for your environment and your own needs, which that flexibility, you know, that's a great advantage for IT departments.
Yeah, definitely. So we've looked so far at using PowerShell to be able to customize the configuration of what's running inside of a VM through this custom script approach. But there's also the ability through PowerShell to auto-provision the fabric elements of our hybrid cloud as well. So things like storage and networking and virtual machines and manage them kind of outside of what's running inside the virtual machines, the cloud infrastructure essentially. So what I'm going to do next, I'm going to switch over into one of my other lab environments. And as we've talked about throughout this series, you know, Azure is really becoming more than just our public cloud platform. You know, we've got Microsoft Azure as our public cloud platform, but we also provide the Azure Pack as a set of IP, a set of bits that you can install in your own on-premises environment and use the Azure Pack through the service management portal to gain that same type of self-service interface for provisioning and managing workloads in your data center. So you have consistency through the GUI between Azure in the public cloud and Azure Pack in your private cloud as part of that hybrid strategy. Well, the nice thing is that if we're managing workloads, you know, some of those workloads might start off in the private cloud and move to the public cloud or vice versa. Or in other cases, you may have workloads that are multi-tier applications that actually stretch across public and private cloud tiers. You might have a site-to-site network connection between Azure and your on-premises data center, and you want to be able to have maybe the web tier of an application living up in Azure, talking to a database tier of the application that's perhaps still running on-premises in your data center, accessing the data off over that site-to-site connection, that secure site-to-site connection. To automate the management and provisioning of these workloads and the fabric, regardless of if it's on the Microsoft Azure public cloud or on the Azure Pack in your private cloud, we provide a free Azure PowerShell module that you can download right from azure.microsoft.com. You can go to the downloads page, and as you scroll down, one of the downloads you'll see is under command line tools, installing the Windows PowerShell module for Azure. And this installs a PowerShell module not only for Azure, but also for Azure PAC. And I would advise that, as a lot of you know, Azure as a cloud platform is on a pretty quick cadence for new releases and features. Every few weeks, we're releasing new features and capabilities. And on a monthly, or in some cases, a multiple times per month basis, as new features are released, the PowerShell module for Azure is also updated to provide PowerShell support for those new features. So if you've installed the Azure PowerShell module a while ago, I'd encourage you to go back out and make sure you're grabbing the latest PowerShell module, and then check back at least on a monthly basis to make sure that you continue to have the latest module installed so that you can take advantage of PowerShell with all those latest, greatest features. So I've already installed the Azure PowerShell module inside my environment, and if I go over to my ISE environment, my PowerShell integrated scripting environment, just like we were before, we can play around with this a little bit. I'm just going to do a git module and specify, just so you can see, my Azure module. So I've already installed it. So when we run git module Azure, it will show us the name of our Azure module, the list of commands that it's supporting, and the version number of that Azure module. So I'm currently on version 0.8.5, the latest version as of today's episode recording. And that's an easy way of being able to say, hey, am I on an older version of Azure that's not the latest, greatest? You can certainly go out and get the latest version of that. Once you've installed the Azure PowerShell module, you can take a look at what's available to you. So if you run git Azure environment, for instance, well, you can see that by default, when the PowerShell module installs for Azure, you've got two different environments that you can connect to. Both of these are Azure public cloud environments. Our Azure cloud environment, which is the primary Azure public cloud environment for North America, Europe, Asia, and Eastern Asia, and South America. And then we also have the Azure China cloud environment that's a separate connection to our Azure China data center regions. They're managed as a separate environment due to some of the China government regulations and whatnot. In addition to those, though, we can also add our own custom environments for our Azure PAC installations and then be able to use a single PowerShell script for managing and provisioning Fabric resources and virtual machines through a script in the Azure PAC as well as the Azure public environment. But let's get started just authenticating to our Azure subscription in the public cloud first. So I'm going to run add Azure account first. And that's going to ask me to authenticate to Microsoft Azure, our public cloud platform. So I'll log in with my subscription ID. Oop, does need to be spelled right. Click continue, and it'll redirect me to the password page to authenticate to my public cloud platform. And now that I'm authenticated to my Azure platform, if I run git Azure subscription, it'll show me a list of all of the subscriptions that I have in my public cloud Azure environment. So I've got three subscriptions, and if we switch back to the Azure portal, these are the same three subscriptions that appear over here in my list of subscriptions in the public cloud Azure portal. Now that I'm connected and authenticated through PowerShell, I can run a variety of different Azure PowerShell modules to interact with that environment. So if I wanted to see a list of my currently provisioned VMs, well, I can run git Azure VM and be able to return back a list of all of my currently provisioned VMs in my across my subscriptions, for instance. And it's going out to the public cloud now through a secure REST endpoint, querying that and returning back, here's my list of currently running VMs across my current subscriptions. And I have different commands, just like we talked about with that standard syntax of using a verb-noun syntax. If I wanted to provision new VMs in Azure, there's a new Azure VM syntax. If I wanted to remove Azure VMs, deprovision them, there's a remove Azure VM syntax. There's commandlets for storage. There's commandlets for networking. In fact, at the bottom of this article page, you'll find another link that's a great cross-reference to getting started with all of the different Azure commandlets for scripting and automating your environment. Well, we talked about being able to authenticate and bring in our Azure public cloud subscriptions, but in the same script, in the same scripting environment, we can also add in our Azure Pack private cloud environments. And we do that with the add Azure environment commandlet. All we have to do is give our Azure Pack environment a descriptive name, and then point it to the service management address in our Azure Pack environment for pulling back a published settings file that'll have the equivalent type of credentials that we used with Add Azure Account to authenticate to our public Azure platform. Published settings files basically have the subscription ID and certificate information that's used for authenticating to an Azure subscription, in this case an Azure Pack subscription. So I'll go ahead and click on Add Azure Environment and add that in. And what that'll do is that'll add my Azure Pack as a new environment. If I go back up and run Get Azure Environment now, I should have three, as a new Azure environment that I can authenticate against. So now I can have one script that runs PowerShell commandlets against the public cloud and my private cloud consistently, being able to manage those resources back and forth. Now to authenticate to my Azure Pack, I can run Get Azure Published Settings File and just specify that it's the Azure Pack environment I want to pull that published settings file from. So if I run that, it'll take me out to my Azure Pack environment. If I hadn't logged in already, I was previously logged in to the Azure Pack tenant portal. If I hadn't logged in, it would prompt me to log in. And now it's asking me to download that published settings file. So I can just save that off. And then once I've saved that off, to use that to authenticate, I just import that published settings file and specify the path to where it's saved. So I can go ahead and import that, and now when I run Git subscription again, instead of having just my Azure public cloud subscriptions, now I've got my new subscription plan from the Azure Pack that we defined in an earlier episode, the developer plan. And I can use that developer plan to interact with it much like I would a normal public cloud Azure subscription. So I can select that as the current subscription that I wish to work with. And then if I wish to see, well, what's my virtual machines? There's a Git Windows Azure Pack VM that I can use for a commandlet that I can use for seeing, well, what's my provision virtual machines in the private cloud? So I've got just one, not quite as many as I do on the Azure in my public cloud subscriptions. And I can feed that into a variable and begin doing creative things with it. Like if I wanted to manage shutting down or starting up, or working with virtual networks in the Azure Pack. So I can see here's my list of virtual networks that are defined on the Azure Pack side and interact with them. Remember in our earlier episodes, we also defined some templates in the Azure Pack for provisioning new virtual machines. So I can go out and grab a list of those templates. And then if I wanted to use a particular template, maybe my DB server template, for instance, for provisioning a new VM through a script, I can feed that in as the name of my template to use. I can prompt for the credentials that I'd like to use for my initial admin credentials that are provisioned inside the VM. And then I've got a new Windows Azure Pack VM commandlet that I can use to specify, well, what do I want to call the VM? What's the name that I'm going to associate with this VM? What template do I want to use? What credentials do I want to use? And be able to very quickly spin up additional virtual machines. And then once those virtual machines are spun up, optionally use PowerShell remoting to perform functions much like we saw from the Azure portal with custom scripts, of being able to shove custom scripts inside the VM to configure the workload that's running inside that virtual machine. So it's really easy to get started with PowerShell, to start learning it from a command standpoint. There's a great course that's available on our Microsoft Virtual Academy that's listed at the bottom of the page if you need to know more about PowerShell. If you're interested in learning more about automation with PowerShell and other capabilities, there's another great automation course that's listed at the bottom of the page. And we'll definitely include links to all of the script resources as well that we've been showing so that you can leverage them too. So, Andy, what do you think? This makes sense, do you think, for looking at automating the hybrid cloud both inside and outside the virtual machine workloads that you're running?
I think it really plays to that whole hybrid cloud approach. I mean, it doesn't matter where the workload is hosted. It could be in Azure. It could be, you know, on-premise data center with the Azure pack. The point is single pane of glass management of automation all through PowerShell, single tool. You know, as IT pros, it makes our job that much easier just by having the one tool to know. And like we were talking about earlier, it all comes back down to standardization. So I think this really achieves that nicely.
Cool. Well, why don't we head back to the office and we'll finish up our conversation today.
Sure.
Well, Andy, thanks for working with me today to show everybody some of the great features that we have in the hybrid cloud to get started with automation using PowerShell.
Yeah, no worries. It's fun. It's all good stuff. And, you know, like you were saying earlier, don't be afraid of PowerShell. You know, me personally, how I learned is I just started picking it up and learning it as I was trying to solve issues, right? And right. Just after a while, you really kind of get into the syntax, you get used to it, and at that point, you know, it's a good point in time to go out and kind of fill your knowledge gaps at that point. So don't be afraid of it. I guess that's just the big point, right?
Yeah, definitely. I like that scenario-based approach that you had mentioned where, you know, think about the things as an IT pro that you're doing on a repetitive basis today. Mm-hmm. And then maybe don't think about the really big, you know, 100-step tasks that you're doing. But right. Within those, if you have some of those really big tasks, look for the minor stuff first, the subset first that's achievable. So things like we showed, like joining a computer to a domain, you know, mm-hmm. Think about ways of automating that with consistency so you're not having to do that manually. And then go to the next step to say, well, okay, what are the key workloads inside that VM beyond, once it's joined to the domain, what are the key things that I do as a next step? And then maybe build up a little bit more from a scripting standpoint to encompass that. And then where does it, you know, what are the top three workloads? Maybe target those next. But take it one step at a time. And you're right. I think if you take that scenario-based approach, it makes learning PowerShell not only easier and more relevant, but at the end of the day, it gives you a sense of real accomplishment.
Yeah.
Because you're helping to take something that's probably a set of repetitive tasks that are piling up on your desk and reduce that so that you can focus on other more strategic things and be able to accomplish those repetitive tasks quickly and with predictability.
Yep, absolutely.
Great. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today in our TechNet Radio episode for getting started with automation. Hopefully it was enough to whet your appetite and check out the additional resources below on our page to go that next step. And then don't fear, in the upcoming episodes, we'll be talking about other ways of leveraging automation as well to go more deeply into different scenarios. And I know Andy's been working on some projects of his own that hopefully he'll be willing to share with us in future episodes too.
Yep, sure will.
Great. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you in a future episode on TechNet Radio of Building Your Hybrid Cloud.